This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it, count it up, count it up, count it up, count it.
Hour two Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Frankie Corrado, Gordon Miller in here. Rick Bonus, the new GM, or the new coach.
New coach.
Oh, yeah. Out in Winnipeg. I was thinking his son, Ryan, the new assistant GM out in Ottawa.
Ryan's got the two cup rings.
Yeah, down in Pittsburgh, right? Yeah.
Former pro scout. I think he was part of the reason I got traded to Pittsburgh. I remember hearing that he was at a lot of the Marlies games and put in a good word for me. So shout out to Ryan.
There you go. Yeah, well, what does that say about his career?
He freed me. Well, I let him down a little bit. So you're not going to bat 1,000.
Hey, listen, he's in your corner. Maybe you got a job waiting for you in Ottawa, Frankie. I don't know.
Get
in the bike, Frankie.
Yeah, get in shape. You never know. You look like a pro. You're dressed like a pro. Although, Gord, you and I, we're dressed like the NHL at the draft. Because you go to the NHL draft, it's everyone is in khakis that are too tight, massive brown belts, and golf shirts.
Yes.
Every single person.
That is the team. And in the winter, it's the vest or the team-issued jacket.
Oh, right. Guys love team-issued stuff.
And the zippy sweater underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
When you sign with an NHL team to work for them, here's your golf shirt. Here, as you mentioned.
Oh, and you bet they're asking for it, too.
Oh, yeah. Like three different shades for three different days. Like when we used to do shows at the draft, like we were in New York, Florida, Chicago, and you'd be out at night having dinner or whatever, and you'd see someone walk in, khakis and a shirt. You're like, all right, what is that? It's like, okay, it's Carolina.
Yeah.
And over there, you're like, there's Tampa, there's Minnesota. Minnesota, that looks green.
Yeah.
It's the exact same apparel for everyone, but all
the jackets are black. And it's like the player. No offense, Frankie, with the players.
We all dress the same. We wear Lululemon, and the guys who make a little more money get like the fancier stuff.
Hugo Boss.
The suits are all like, I always laugh because hockey players are such creatures of habit. So I've been to, I don't know, 20,000 morning skates in practice. I don't know how many it's been. The guys get on, and they skate counterclockwise.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
I always wonder what would happen if the first guy came out and went clockwise.
Never happened.
What would happen?
Like there would be chaos.
It would be like if they drove the wrong way to NASCAR race. It would feel weird.
Because even if you go skate in the summer, like even now, I go skate, like I'm on the ice counterclockwise. I don't know what to tell you. It's just how it is.
If an NHL player ever wore a brown suit, it would be like,
yeah. Well, you're not allowed to do that.
Now it's like, so I got my guy Dom in Woodbridge, who does my suits. And recently, in the last couple of years, I go, Dom, we got to go tighter. Because how much tighter can we go? I said, you just got to do it, man. Everyone's going tighter. Everyone's going slimmer. You got to find a way. It's such a battle with the old tailor.
I had the same scenario. It was my brother-in-law was getting married. And we went to, I don't remember his name, but it was somewhere in Etobicoke. And he had his own shop. And he was a great guy, great options. And we went in there and we got fitted, and we were like, you realize, like, this is 2019, I believe, 2018. We're like, suits cannot look like it's 1978.
Can't be baggy.
No way. They cannot be baggy. And we all came back for the fitting, and they were all, like, he couldn't put in the order for slimmer pants. Like, it just doesn't exist, man. It's not in the machine.
It's not in the computer. It's just, they can't make it that way.
Can't do it, man.
You should have seen, I told him too, I go, Dom, I want to go no-show sock. You understand what that means? Like, I want to barely be able to get my foot through the hole, and I want no-show. I want, like, an inch and a half of skin. He goes, buddy, what are you talking about? Come on, man. Like, you're killing me here. Yeah. Like, this is where it's going.
Not allowed.
My tailor is a guy, John Mathiodakis, in Ancaster. Mm-hmm. And so, John, I said, okay, here's the deal. If I put a credit card in the inside pocket of my suit, I want it to be visible. That's how this has got to fit. Because otherwise, like, you walk into a rink now. Like, seriously, if you walk into a rink now and a player sees you and your pants aren't, like, what, are you riding a chicken in there?
Yeah, I know. And pro players should be a little bit more understanding. They're athletes.
Yeah, I'm 57,
man.
Yeah,
exactly.
And you know what else, too? Like, I've been around, and you ever see, like, a media type in the room, and he's dressed bad? You know he's getting chirped in the dry area. Like, did you see it? What is he wearing today? Like, did you see the shoes? I got some names. I won't say it, but man, there were some guys who,
and there it doesn't matter. They're showing up. They're gonna write whatever they're gonna write.
It's like a contest.
Not
like,
my issue.
When you show up at the rink though, and you're wearing like you know, I have to wear suits.
Yeah,
they're reviewing you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, because that's the nature of the room. Like that's actually almost a form of acceptance. Like if you're coming in. There's a review process, and it's going to go both ways. You know it if you're on the team and you've got bad gear, you are going to get destroyed.
I love chirping coaches. So I'll see a guy called like DJ Smith, right?
Yeah.
DJ's a great guy, so I'll see him in Ottawa. So you can wear that tight end area? What do you mean? What are you talking about? He falls for
it. You know that gets in his kitchen, too.
Oh, yeah.
Those are the worst kinds of comments, you know?
Does that tie go with that jacket? What are you talking about?
Well, we got Rick Bonus going to join us here in just a second. Like, Rick has been behind the bench more than anyone.
Yeah.
Like, how many suits... He's got to have a couple suits that should not still be.
He's got some good style too, though. You see some of the pieces he breaks out.
Yeah,
yeah,
good styles. But he's got to have one or two suits still lurking that should not be around for 2022. I would think. Now he's got the new gig. He's back in Winnipeg. Possibly a completely new wardrobe. Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. Let's bring him in here. The new head coach. He's going back to where it all started in Winnipeg. Here's Rick Bonus. How you doing, Rick?
Great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're just talking about styles in the NHL, and you've been around long enough to remember, I'm sure, baggy suits, like checkered old school suits.
I remember bell bottoms and wide lapels. Come on, that's before I got into coaching. That was more as a player.
Right. But now these guys are wearing like painted on suits where the ankles are showing. Like, can you keep up with that style, or what's your plan?
No, I can't do that. The tight ones and the short ones, no, I can't get into that. I'm a little too old for that stuff.
Okay.
But my wife, Judy, dresses me, and she keeps me up to speed as much as she can.
Bonesy.
We've got three kids, and they kind of keep us in line.
Bonesy, I was telling these guys that you were basically my first coach in Vancouver, first assistant coach. You ran the D, and since I got away from you, things went downhill, and here I am at TSN doing radio. So I miss you, buddy.
Well, I'm sure. I'm not sure much I can help you, but yeah, I'm always listen. You're in the game. You're working. That's a good thing. We're still on the positive.
Well, we've been talking about your career, Rick. That you've been behind the bench for so long. And Gord, you're saying it's like 1% separation, I guess, or one degree separation.
We could play the 1 degree of Rick Bonus. You've either played for Rick Bonus in the NHL, or you're playing with someone who played for him. Guaranteed.
Yeah. Like that's
yeah.
Is that how it feels, Rick? Like when someone has to introduce themselves, basically everyone knows you and everyone's known you in the NHL for a long time.
Yeah, it's pretty much where I know, I get that. But, you know, like when I got into coaching, I say this all the time, I was younger than some of the players, and now I'm old enough to be their grandfather. But you know, we're playing teams, and I don't know if there's a team in the league that I look out there, and I usually do that. I say, who have I coached on this team? There may be one or two teams in the league. There's a player on there that I haven't coached. So, yeah, we're still surviving. It is what it is, and I'm still thrilled to be involved and still thrilled to be coaching every day in the National Hockey League. As you guys all know, every day in our league is a great day.
Yep, well, exactly. And you're going back to where it all started on the NHL front, you being behind a bench in Winnipeg and how cool have the last few days been? Kind of, I'm sure you're hearing from people in Winnipeg, maybe that you haven't heard from in a long time. And what are you expecting the experience to be like now that you're going back and it's kind of full circle in terms of your career?
Yeah, it's nice to come back, but it's basically that would be the third most important point. The first two would be, you know, after the season, Judy and I were looking at each other saying, okay. If we get back into it, let's make sure we're working with really good people. So it really helped Chevy and Larry and Zinger and Mark. They're great people to work for, and I'm really looking forward to that. And the second point is you got to have a chance to win. I had some opportunities that I turned down that were, you know, working with younger coaches, and the team is basically on a rebuild, and I didn't want to get into that. I've done that too much in my career, so that encouraged me. But the third point is Winnipeg, and it's nice to come back. Our daughter was born here. We have a lot of great memories of our. I worked for the Jets for 9 years, And I remember the first whiteout, and the neighborhood we lived in when we were here, the kids were all young. Judy had a lot of friends in the neighborhood, the kids that were lived on a great street. So a lot of great memories of living here as well. But again, the most important part for me is the good people that we're going to work with and the chance, we have a good chance to win here.
Bones, when I look at Winnipeg's roster, it checks off a lot of boxes for me, right? You have the goaltending, you have some good pieces on the back end, you have some pieces up front. Like, is that the kind of way you see it when you go through the hiring process? You think, like, I can really work with this, and there's maybe just something else that this team needs to get over the hump?
Well, it is. And it was being in Dallas for 4 years and been playing against these guys a couple of years ago. They were one tough team to play against. And, at the end of the game, it was a hard-fought game. For whatever reason, this team lost its way last year a little bit. And again, I'm not here to criticize. I'm not here to second-guess. I wasn't around. It just wasn't the same team to play against. But you're right. The ingredients you need to win are here. The goaltender is one of the best in the league, and Connor Hellebuck, great kid. Great goaltender. Clearly, the defense is solid enough, but we're going to get more offense from them. I think that's an area we can improve. And clearly, the forwards, there's some great forwards up front and good balance. And we can play a fast game. We can play a gritty game. Should be able to score. So, anyways, it's a little bit of everything, but you need a little bit of everything, and the ingredients are here, and it's going to be up to this coaching staff to pull it all together, make this team hard to play against again, and get us back in that playoff hunt.
Rick, for a long time in the league, the goal was to allow fewer goals than the opposition. It was defend your way to a championship. But in the last couple of years, and even further back than that, we do seem to see the pendulum swinging. And, of course, the NHL we talk about is a copycat league. But how much do you think wins by teams like Colorado and Tampa have swung that pendulum?
Okay. So what was the score of the Stanley Cup clincher game this year? 2-1. What was it last year when Tampa won? 1-0. So those teams can score. But they also ran, you go back to Tampa being swept by Columbus 3 years ago. They just got pushed all over the place and they didn't have an answer. So they changed half their roster. They figured out how to play a tough, gritty game with that third and fourth lines, which was a key for them winning the Stanley Cup. Colorado had a lot of speed, but they also knew how to defend. And that became very obvious in game 6 when they won 2-1. Can they score? Absolutely they can score. But they knew they weren't going to win unless they played little defense, kept the puck out of their zone, kept the puck out of their net. And they did a really good job of that in that game 6 against a very elite, high-scoring team. So both those teams that you talked about, yeah, they can score. They're fun to watch, and they're tough to play against. But when the cup is on the line and the season's on the line, they can defend just as well.
Bones, you had a great interview this season, and I liked it for this reason, because you said, I didn't even ask the players to come into the rink today. I just told them, take care of yourselves at home. It's been a long season, but when you come to the game tonight, be ready to play. Are you finding that the longer you're spending time in the league now and you see today's athlete, you giving them more autonomy to just take care of themselves as they see fit, just be ready to play when it comes 7 or 7:30 p.m.?
Yes, and a big part of that is the travel in Dallas. It was a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be. There were just too many nights that you're getting home at 2 in the morning. And as you know, that adds up. And you get into February, March, and April, and it's been a long season, and you're not getting the proper rest every night. It adds up. So there comes a point where you've worked with them, you've taught them how to be good pros, how to look after themselves, and you've got to trust them. And we came to that point that, okay, we're at the point of the season here, man. Bringing them into the rink, we're not going to get anything out of them physically or mentally. Stay away. And try to stay as fresh as we could mentally and physically. And that means keeping them away from the rink. Nothing worse than dragging them down the rink when they don't want to be there and they're tired. You're not going to get anything out of them. And so there comes a point, and you got to go by the feel of your team and your schedule and your travel and everything else. But there comes a point you got to trust them and you got to say, okay, no need to show up tomorrow. Just come, as you mentioned, in the right frame of mind, ready to play, ready to compete.
Well, Rick, one thing that the one guy in your family that doesn't need help in the suit department is your son, Ryan, who has, I must say, a strong suit game. Ryan yeah. brings a strong suit game. He's a stylish guy, now assistant GM of the Ottawa Senators. So this has been a big month for the Bonus family.
Well, it has been a big week. So what you're also not talking about is that my son, Ricky, they live in Denver, and his wife, Jody, is the vice president of suite sales and ticket sales for the Colorado Avalanche.
Oh, no.
So yeah, hang on. So she gets a cup pendant.
Yeah.
Ryan's got two rings with Pittsburgh.
Well, one ring in Pittsburgh. He was there for the second one.
Okay.
And Jody will get a replica ring. But, yeah, so it was a big week for us, for sure.
Yeah,
Ryan's a good dresser, and he'll talk to Judy and say, yeah, Dad can't wear that one again. Throw that one out.
Yeah, well, that'll be fun. I'm assuming you'll be at the draft. I know he'll be there at the draft, and you guys will be
there now.
There you go. Yeah, he's there in Montreal, and obviously he's assistant GM in Ottawa, so we wish him nothing but success. And same thing applies with you out in Winnipeg. Rick, congrats on the gig, and good luck moving forward. We'll do this again down the road. Thank you for this.
Look forward. Thanks for your time, guys.
You got it.
Very nice.
Yep. Rick Bonus, new head coach out in Winnipeg.
So Frank, you can speak to him. You played for him. I think the thing about Rick is there are coaches who wear guys out.
A lot of them do.
A lot of them. They grind. They wear you out. I can think of someone in Toronto. I'm trying to think of his name.
That's a whole, thing.
Yeah, he's around somewhere.
But Rick Bonus has managed over the years to walk a balance. You don't hear guys say, I couldn't stand that guy.
Yeah.
But you also don't hear him say, you know, it was a country club.
It's a little different when you're an assistant. Sure. So I had him as an assistant, and he was phenomenal, man. You're talking like stuff after practice, talking to you, making you feel comfortable. I remember my very first game, he came up to me, and just like the nicest way, he goes, hey, kid. He goes, just play. Don't even think about anything. Just go out there and play. I was like, okay, sure. Like, he goes, make mistakes. I said, yeah, no problem. Probably going to make a lot tonight. Yeah, and when you get to the head coach stage where he's at, you're in one of two camps. I played a lot, and I got good ice time, and I like my coach. I didn't play. He's a nice guy. I don't like him because I didn't play. You know, so there's a little bit of that when it comes to being a head coach. But as an assistant, he's pretty much universally liked around the board.
Yeah, listen, for him to be in the league as long as he has been and have so many different stops, clearly he brings a certain persona. He must bring a certain level of evaluation to the game as well. Like the ability to evaluate what he has, what he doesn't have,
which
he's not always going to necessarily say to the players. But behind closed doors, you like you mentioned it, working with the people in Winnipeg. And that team has a reputation of being in turmoil right now. Like they do.
And underachievers, man.
Well, we don't know.
He's got to figure out what the issue is.
Is Scheifele going to be there?
I don't know.
You know, is he going
to? That seems to have cooled down a little bit, but that was... like a big, big rumor or belief that Scheifele was the one that was going to go.
It doesn't make sense.
And maybe he wanted out. As well, remember his comments at the end of the year? Like he said, I'm going to evaluate with my agent. I'll let you know. Like that was not a comment that would have played well in Winnipeg.
I don't know how you guys feel, but when you look at Winnipeg's roster on paper, it doesn't make sense that they underachieve every year. It doesn't. They have good players.
Well, I think that defense got hollowed out, right? They lost Byfuglien.
Right.
They lost Trouba. They lost... who else?
Well, Myers
left.
Myers.
Sherratt. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So their top four got hollowed out. So I do think you're asking a lot of Josh Morrissey to play the heavy minutes that he plays without guys behind him.
Right.
Yeah. So that, I mean, I do think that's part of what happened there. There have been, you know, a lot of stories about, you know, prickly personalities behind the scenes. The Lyonnais thing, you know, the Patrick Lyonnais stuff was, you know, there was a lot of friction there.
Yeah. Blake Wheeler, there's a lot of smoke around him too.
Yeah,
he's the captain of the team.
Yeah, so, but to your point, I think, you know, and what was the first thing Rick said? World-class goalie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like when Ken Holland got the GM's job in Edmonton, and people said, why are you going there? Like, it's a toxic market. The team is, you know, he said, how many times do you walk into a job with the two of the best players in the world?
Oh, and that makes it a no-brainer for me. Like, how do you not say yes to that job? You have Dreisaitl and McDavid. Right,
but if you're Rick Bonus, you start off with a star goalie. I mean, we talked about earlier in the show, Brian. I mean, there's a handful of goalies who are game changers. Connor Hellebuyck has been in the past one of them.
And it's funny, like this year, I did a lot of Leaf games. I did Leafs lunch. He never came up when we talk about the top three, four, even five goalies in the league.
He didn't have a great season this year.
He was an omission, and in years past, he wasn't.
Absolutely. Like when he won the Vezina a couple of years ago, a few years ago, he's a stud. Like he is absolutely a stud. I wonder if they were in on Ryan McDonagh and he wouldn't waive to go there. That wouldn't surprise me. I think Winnipeg has a big issue with that. They're not alone. The Canadian markets in general have a big issue with that. But I think Winnipeg is probably at the front of the line, like being honest in terms of players that are not willing to come up. I think a lot of coaches probably not willing to come up as well. Like Barry Trotz is from Winnipeg, and they went full court press on him, and he turned
it
down.
I wonder with Trotz, do you think he looked at the roster and he saw the smoke that we're talking about and said, it's not for me?
You know what, though?
Possibly.
He could have had any job he wanted to and didn't take them.
Sure.
Right? Like he could have been the guy in Dallas, probably could have the job in Vegas. He chose. I wouldn't take it.
It's not only Winnipeg.
I wouldn't say that specific.
But he's from Dauphin, Manitoba. Yeah, and anyway, I mean, that would have been a big landing spot for them.
You're right. The Canadian market thing is becoming more and more.
It was when I was in the league, too.
It's becoming more of an issue. Because
I don't think COVID helped either.
You're right. If you look at guys that have limited no trades, where they can name 10 teams that they can't be traded to, which is fairly common, in the vast majority of cases, it's the seven Canadian teams, Buffalo, Columbus, and somewhere else.
But the honest truth is, no one wants to pay 52% tax. I'm sorry. That's the way it
is. Part of the thing is Ryan McDonagh.
It's simple as that.
Like Ryan McDonagh got dealt. You got to think he was looking at Vegas, Nashville, Florida Panthers.
State tax.
No state tax. He's going to go somewhere with Seattle.
Well, the Dadonov thing. Remember the Dadonov no trade, whatever it was? He was looking at $1 million less playing in California. And that's not even Anaheim's beautiful, but that's what it comes down to.
In Canada, there are ways to defer. There are ways now with these what's called RCAs and retirement compensation agreements, where you can actually lower your like Jake Muzzin, I think, pays lower taxes in Toronto than he did in LA.
Yeah, I've heard of that as well, read of that, but I think it's more than just the taxes. I think it's the weather up here is one thing. I think the amount of media and attention. Let's be honest, we're talking 30 years of collective losing.
Right.
Like, there's not been a cup winner here in 30 years.
But the media
takes
in Toronto's not.
No, it's not.
You play for the Leafs.
Like it's that there are. The fact is, in the NHL, there are about a third of the markets where nobody knows who you are.
100%.
Yeah.
Literally nobody knows who you are.
You get a block from the rink, and you are.
Matthews could walk down Manhattan Beach and not be bothered.
Absolutely. I get the impression, like, in his hometown, he's not very well known. Like in Phoenix, I've heard that he's
that's the hockey player guy.
Exactly.
That's
like compared to Toronto, he would be a million times more recognizable and popular up here.
The draft that drops in Florida when your Gretzky was there and he was walking down the street in Fort Lauderdale, like no one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Wayne Gretzky's a perfect example.
I think it does appeal to some guys, right? I think Scott Niedermayer liked playing in Jersey and Anaheim.
Yeah.
You're not getting bugged at the grocery store. You're not getting bugged at the gas station.
And that's the truth. Like, there's nothing you can do about it.
And you're not even being bugged, Gord, necessarily. It's just like, do I need to have a million stop and chats today? Do I need to hear about how we need a defenseman or we need this and you got to do that? You know what I mean? It just takes a toll. It's just a lot of entertaining voices in and out every day.
The sport's too, it's kind of funny, like, because the sport's too popular.
Up here, exactly. Like, and it's not popular enough in other areas. And we're also talking about, like, you look at, like, in the NFL, if you're a lineman in almost any market, you're not really going to, no one's really going to pay attention to you. If you're a quarterback in every market, people know who you are.
Yeah.
If you're in the NBA, because you're 7 feet tall, you can't go anywhere
without people knowing. There's no hiding.
Like, Kevin Durant, Luka Doncic, they can't walk into the room and people just be like, whatever.
Wonder what he does.
Someone who doesn't know anything about basketball is still going
to
look at you because
automatically
you're 7 feet tall.
So the funny thing is, look at the contrast. NBA players, we think, don't want to come here because it's not enough of a media market. They don't get enough attention. NHL players don't want to come here because it's too much of a media market and they get too much attention. So what's the deal? Like, what's
That's the thing, and it's not like you can't paint everyone with the same brush.
No,
you got. There are a lot of players who love it, who actively seek it out, that want to be a part of it, and understand that there is the possibility of making more money based off the branding up here.
Yeah, there's a buzz, man. Like they're like Hockey Night in Canada, Saturday night home games. Playing for the Leafs, there was a really cool buzz that you just don't get if it was a Saturday night game in, I don't want to say a market, but let's just say down south, and it's like it's Saturday. It just doesn't feel like Saturday night, you know? There's certain buzz that comes with playing for the Leafs,
there's a buzz,
playing in a Canadian market.
There's a buzz walking. Like one of my favorite things, I take the subway down to the Leaf games, and one of my favorite things to do is just that walk, and I get there a couple hours before the game, but still that buzz on the street in a Canadian market that, you know, Montreal, when you go to the rink in Montreal, when you go, a lot of these buildings, when you go, there's this great sort of feeling of an event.
Yeah.
Like there's a really cool sort of, right? It's not a standard kind of.
Well, and that's what makes it, like baseball's probably an example that's closest to hockey in terms of some markets it's huge, some markets it's not.
Yeah.
You know, if you're playing left field, hitting eighth in the lineup, and you're playing in Arizona or whatever, I don't know how popular you are. I don't know how many people know who you are. But if you're a Yankee, everyone knows who you are,
yeah.
You know, regardless of where you are. If you're a Red Sox, if you're a Cub, and it's the same kind of thing. The event, the liveliness of it all, you know, that's just the nature of it. And
it's not for everyone, man.
It's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone.
It's not. And again, with COVID, like, I think we're coming out of it. We're moving in different directions, but it still is. Like, if you're not vaccinated, you're not coming up. If you have family members that aren't,
I'll tell you what. Like, for me, playing for the Leafs, I couldn't believe how many times my name was trending on Twitter. I was the eighth defenseman. I wasn't even the next guy in. I was two out of the lineup,
right.
And my name was trending on Twitter.
What's up,
like,
Frank?
Like, it's ridiculous. Like, no, it's ridiculous. But you know what I mean, right?
Yeah, it is the magnitude of it, and I think that part of it is too that, you know, we saw some American players really chafed the last couple of years playing in Canada.
Yes.
Yeah.
Understandably so, based on what they were seeing in their own.
Because their buddies are back home.
Yeah, but they also had family back home that couldn't get. Yeah. If you have two kids, three kids, and you're trying to play in the NHL, you're talking about school, doctor's appointments, all these things that you're not around to help with. It takes a toll on you.
Well, look at Nick Foligno. They acquired him, and he's like, his family, they weren't even thinking of coming up.
No.
It was like, they're staying in Columbus.
Yeah.
They're not coming up. Like, no chance. So, you know, that's that. Now, that was 2020, 2021. We're into a different era now, but it definitely took a toll. Like, the Canadian division was exclusively empty. And the American divisions slowly but surely got going. All right, Steve Phillips will join us on the Jays weekend, the Jays staff. What's up with these arms? You know, the rotation is one thing. The bullpen is another. But Alek Manoah is on the mound tonight, so we'll tee up game one of a three-game series in Oakland. Steve Phillips will join us next. All right, so the Jays are on the West Coast. They've got three in Oakland and four in Seattle. And no days off, man. They're playing every single day. And, again, I was at the game on Saturday when Gausman went down. He got out of a jam in the first, and then he goes down, and you realize this Lawrence character is coming in here, and he's going to have to give him, like, five innings.
Yeah.
Because it's a doubleheader. Hatch is going at night. He got destroyed. But they don't have the arms right now with Ryu out, with obviously, you know, other concerns in the bullpen. We mentioned Nate Pearson was a guy that maybe you'd hope would be a part of the program. It's not going to happen. And at this point, you got Manoah, who is a 10 out of 10 in terms of confidence. And beyond that, it's a little bit concerning, even with the rotation and certainly with the bullpen. And yet, they're in a wild card spot. They're still in a good place. Game 81 tonight. We're halfway home. Here's our TSN MLB analyst, Steve Phillips. What's happening, Steve?
Hey, guys, good to be with you. Happy 4th of July.
Yes.
Had a great weekend, and I know it's, you're not celebrating it the way we are here, but glad to be on to talk some baseball.
Yeah, likewise, buddy. Happy 4th of July. It's great to have you. We appreciate you doing it on a day like today. And the Jays, you know, that series started so well. Their bats were alive. The arms were alive. Thursday, Friday, then Saturday, the doubleheader, they got torched, and yesterday it got away from them as well. And the focus in the city clearly is not just the rotation, but the staff in general, the arms in general. They're in a wild card spot. I think they'll remain there. But how many arms away do you believe this team is from actually being World Series competitive?
Well, I think that first, you know, Gosman's health coming back from the ankle is going to be important. But, you know, I was really happy to see that, I mean, think how catastrophic it could have been if Kikuchi and Barrios weren't really good.
Right.
Remember, that's Thursday, Friday. And if those two guys aren't, you know, much better than they've been, then you've got a real issue on your hands. And so, you know, because they were so good, I think it at least protected numbers of pitchers and innings and everything else on in the doubleheader. But, look, I think they're going to probably need another starter. And I think one or two more relievers. And that's going to be very doable in the trade market. It will be. It's relievers are a dime a dozen to get at the trade deadline. You can find guys who are pitching well on other teams who are available. I remember counting a year, there were like 32 right-handed relievers who got traded. And, you know, I think they could use a left-hander in the mix there, too. And so I think they're going to probably need a couple relievers and a starter. But I think that they can go out and do it. And look, even if they don't get a starter, I think they're a playoff team. It compromises the bullpen a little bit more because of the workload. If you don't get another starter, that you're going to have, you know, relievers coming in earlier in the game. And so ideally, getting another quality starter also makes the bullpen better. And then you fortify the bullpen with a couple more arms. So I think that, and I think Ross Atkins, Mark Shapiro are certainly in a position to be able to do that. They've got a farm system to be able to do that. They could use a pleasant surprise for a Hatch or somebody to step up and maybe take advantage of an opportunity and show what they can do. But I'm, you know, I think that with where they are, they're not going to go into the playoffs necessarily as the best team, you know, with how they're going to, you know, just because where the Mets have been playing or where the Dodgers have been playing or where the Yankees have been playing. But I think they've got a chance to have enough of a roster to win 11 postseason games, or what is it going to be now, like 13 postseason games, to be able to get to a World Series and win it. And so I do think that potential exists for this team.
Steve, it's Gord Miller. I don't do this show a lot. I fill in a lot in the summer and talk to you then, and I feel like a broken record. But is it fair to ask if the bullpen is being unfairly singled out here?
Yeah, I think that you know, I mean, it is, because, you know, they're being asked to eat innings that a bullpen. I guess the best way to explain it is Jim Leland, who I respect a lot as a major league manager. I think he's a Hall of Fame manager. He would say all the time, the best way to have a good bullpen is to keep them in the bullpen, that you use them when you want to, not when you need to. And the Jays have been in positions, obviously, with Gosman getting knocked out early, with Kikuchi and Barrios with these early outings and getting knocked out of games. Charlie Montoya's been in a position where he's had to go to the bullpen because he had no other choice. He had to go out there and do it. And because of the innings workload that they've had. I mean, the other thing is, because they played so many close one-run games, their premium relievers were getting overworked as well. I think at one point they had three relievers on pace for 70-plus games, which is going to be a real wear down on them. Romano, for a closer, was pitching in almost every game. I mean, he pitched in over half the games at one point because of the fact that they played so many close games. So they won a lot of them, which was good. But they do, you know, that bullpen's had a workload, and it's not because the bullpen isn't effective. It's because the rotation has not eaten up some of those innings. So, I think the answer is the bullpen can be solved with better starting pitching. They may need an arm or two, but I think if they get starting pitching that can go deep and at least give them predictable innings, then everybody pitches in the role that they're capable of, they don't get overworked, and they start to pitch better.
Steve, when I look at the Blue Jays and their window to win, it feels like it's relatively now. Like, how much of their futures, if you're Ross Atkins, do you think you'd want to part with to get some help for the right now?
Oh, I think if it were me, I'm an all-in position. Mm-hmm. You don't know from year to year how many times you're going to get an opportunity to be a playoff team. I mean, you can have the roster to start the season, but how many times do things go wrong? Injuries happen. Underperformance happens. You know, there's some, you know, major injuries where guys miss some period of time. And so I've always looked at it as if this is a year that I have a chance to be a playoff team, I'm going for it. And I generally manage that way. I made the deals to get the guys that I thought could help me win a playoff game and help me win a World Series. That guy that over the last 2 months can score an extra run or take away an extra run, that better defender, that better base stealer. And I think the Jays are there. I think they have to. You know, the clock and the window, you don't ever really know how long it's going to last, and you know where guys are going to go with their career. And so when you've got that shot, absolutely you have to take it. And I suspect that, you know, look, I remember when Alex Anthopoulos was here, and you know Mark Shapiro was coming in, and there was some thought that he did not appreciate the way Alex went for it in the year that he did, what, 15 and 16. And so because he gave up a lot of the farm system. That being said, they built it back quickly, and I think that you know when this team and this management group finds themselves in a position, they may not go all in with everybody, but I think they're going to be willing to give up some real talent to make this roster more well-rounded in a playoff team.
Well, especially if it comes with term, right, Steve? I mean, that would be what I would have to believe they're looking for is this window. They think they're in it for a few years, as they should be, with considering the money they gave to Berríos, Gausman. They have Vladdy and Bo, et cetera, under control. Springer, multiple years left on his deal. Like, if you can bring in impact arms, and I think it's more bullpen, you're willing to pay more if you've got a guy under control for two or three years.
Yeah, and even a starter. I think even more so the starter. You know, relievers, you know, getting a reliever that has two or three more years of control, relievers are so hard. It's where general managers make their most mistakes. That from one year to the next, you know, is the guy going to pitch well? What was his workload? How many times did he warm up and sit down? And it's really hard to quantify that impact from one year to the next. So, to me, it would be the starting pitcher that had some controllability. A guy for the rest of this year and next year, I'm going to pay more for him, and I'll absolutely do it with this roster. The relievers, you could always find a guy that's hot, that's a free agent, ride him the rest of this year. If you get another year, fine. But, I mean, those guys, I don't mind getting the rental reliever because you could always go out next year and sign another reliever to take place of that guy. But finding that starter that could really be an answer for you is really where I think the target should be.
Steve, other baseball news today. Apparently Juan Soto was turned down an extension offer of $350 million plus from the Washington Nationals. What does that mean?
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand it.
Put that
I really
into perspective
don't.
For us.
He's hitting 220. I mean, he's not having a real good year. And, you know, I honestly think that the contract's probably weighing on him a little bit, and that because he turned down the big contract earlier already from them, that I think it's affecting him, that he feels like he better go out and play, because if they're going to earn what Scott Boras wants is a $500 million contract, he's going to have to go out and perform even more. And so I don't know. I could never recommend to a client to reject $350 million. I don't know that I could ever do it. So maybe I wouldn't be a good agent, because, you know, the number of catastrophic things can happen, or just a guy starting to underperform even a little bit, and the millions of dollars you're going to leave on the table with that, I think is worth the risk of taking the deal right now. But that's me. And so he's betting on himself. He's a great player. I personally, and others don't agree with me, but I personally think if he underperforms all season this year and then starts to be a little less than what he was in the past, I think he's leaving millions of dollars on the table. So I don't know. I would take the deal if I were him. But here's the thing. I have a ton of respect for his willingness to bet on himself. I will not ask him for financial advice.
Well, in terms of the agent-player relationship, what do you make of this Freddie Freeman story and his bitterness about being in L.A. as opposed to being in Atlanta, firing his agent, reports that the agent was withholding information? How much of this do you believe is true, and where is your fascination level with this story?
Yeah, it is fascinating. One, because Freddie Freeman is one of the classiest players. Casey Close is one of the classiest agents out there. And, you know, you're dealing with the Braves and Dodgers, classy organizations. So, I mean, it's a really hard one to try to understand. There was obviously a real miscommunication between the Braves and the agent and Freddie Freeman and the agent, because Freddie sounds like he didn't want to leave. And, he wanted to make whatever deal was the best deal to be made, and that somewhere along the way in the negotiation, the agent thought he was still negotiating for the best deal from anybody, and or he portrayed that to Atlanta to say, you know, look, we've got the Dodgers who are willing to do more than this. And so, you know, and sort of use them as the stalking horse, to the point where the Braves heard it and said, we're going to lose them, we're not going to get them anyways, so let me go make the Matt Olson deal right now before they make their deal, because it'll be less pressure on me desperately have to get a first baseman. And there had to be a real miscommunication in there. I can't believe, and I know that the agency has disclaimed the notion that they withheld any information as part of it, and I would be surprised if they did. Now, you know, there's a thought that agents sometimes would rather the player sign with the most money rather than the most comfortable location for a little less money, because the agent's commission is based upon, you know, the gross amount of it, 5% of the gross deal, and they're going to get their share of it. So, but I've never experienced Casey Close that way or his agency. And so it seems to me there was a major miscommunication along the way. And those can lead to, you know, breaking up players and agents. But I don't think that there was any, you know, malice in any of it. I don't think.
Yeah, something tells me there'll be some more reporting on that story. I think it will likely continue. Anyway, we'll leave it there, buddy. We appreciate you doing this. Happy holidays, and we'll do it again later in the week.
Terrific. Thanks for what's happening.
Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst.
I agree with you, man. I think there's going to be way more fallout on this agent thing. I was trying to put myself in Freddie Freeman's shoes. If I knew I wanted to go back to a place, I told my agent, make it happen, and I find out after the fact there was funny business.
Oh, you'd freak out for sure.
Full freak.
And the strange thing is, like, the consolation prize is he's an LA Dodger. Like, yeah. He didn't sign for the worst team in baseball in a garbage town. The guy's in L.A. playing for the Dodgers, the best team in baseball, and still making a fortune.
Okay. Yeah,
and we don't know the ins and outs of it. The one thing I would say, though, and you know, Frankie, you're a player. I mean, yeah, your agent does your work for you. You can still talk. There's nothing to stop you from talking to management.
Right. You can.
Like, if you want to talk to the manager, and
but this is a slippery slope.
Especially a player like Freddie Freeman can. I couldn't. You know, I was the kind of guy where if it was June and we were working on an RFA deal, I had to call my agent and be like, can I call the AGM and just talk to him a little bit? Let's say it wasn't moving, or we were like 100,000 off, something like that, right? Like, but a guy like Freddie Freeman, he should be able to pick up the phone, no problem.
Well, again, it's a slippery slope, I think, for players and for management, because the players always have the shield up of, I don't even know, go talk to my agent.
It's true.
You know, and they play that role more so with the fans. Yeah. Hey, don't get mad at me, my agent. Yeah. I don't even know what's going on. So if you start playing the, actually, I am picking up the phone, okay, then the next time the GM wants to call you, you better answer.
And some guys are different. Some guys are wired different. They're just like, you're the agent. You take 5% of a gazillion dollars that I'm going to make. Just do it and do it right.
They don't want to be.
Lots of GMs will call a player if the contract negotiations are breaking down and say, here's our last offer.
For sure.
Cover their bases.
Just so you know, your agent's saying no to this, but I want to say it to you. Yeah. Here's what's on the table.
Yeah. Yeah. But then there's also the relationship between the agents and the GMs and the sensitivity of sandbagging an agent who may be like, all right, I'll get you back down the road.
Oh, you don't think they got new players coming up every year that GMs want? Well, so
it's a really delicate balance, the whole thing. All right, Chris Johnston, our TSN Hockey Insider, in about 15 minutes. Dallas Braden will join us out in Oakland ahead of this series tonight. Starting tonight with the Jays in Oakland playing the Athletics. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Chris Johnston will join us in about 15 minutes. So I had an experience today. I had my daughter with me. We went out for lunch. We're trying to eat lunch, and the hot dog eating contest is on.
Oh, yeah?
Which is the most repulsive TV.
It really is.
It's so disgusting to watch these animals try to eat.
It's not a little bit impressive?
I'm not arguing against...
Joey Chestnut's not a big guy.
No.
No.
And he was wounded, man. He's got a bad knee or whatever. He had a tendon issue. He comes in on crutches, and he battled today. He won his 15th hot dog eating contest.
That can't be good for
long
term.
No one was
close. Just a dominant performance. Year after year, the dominance of Joey Chestnut.
You know what's funny about that is there's a place, what the heck, the burger place downtown, Holy Chuck, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And they got like this giant burger, right? And if you eat it, everyone with you eats for free. And they put your name on the wall, they put your face on the wall.
Yeah, wear a diaper.
It's not big guys. Like it's not big people. It's weird. Like there's a steakhouse, used to have a 72-ounce steak. And if you ate it with the trimmings, your table ate for free. And like there was like this little lawyer who was like 5'11" did it.
But just has the ability to to eat.
They give you gout too on your way home. He's like, here, go home with some gout.
Exactly. Here you go. Go home with severe illness and issues.
I was always a thing. Like, I'm a member at a golf course, right? And like, I played with some older gentlemen, and it's like, oh, where's so and so this week? Nah, he's got gout. Yeah. Oh, where's the other guy? No, it's 2 weeks later. No, he's got gout.
Just wings and beers.
Dwayne Ford, our CFL colleague. You've never seen a human being eat like him.
Oh, yeah.
So expectations, you know, ever been there? They have the construction thing. It's pancake, eggs, pancake, sausage, pancake, bacon, pancake.
Jeez.
He has that. That and breakfast.
Wow.
No.
Like
That's impressive.
The man eats, like, it's incredible.
Yeah. Like, I guess it's a talent. It's not one that really is necessary at all. But Joey Chestnut is like a household name. Because of
he's a brand. He's like a
a rock star when it comes to every
single year.
He must
make a killing in endorsements and appearances and all that kind of stuff.
Like, you probably just hire him out to show up at like a party as like a prop. He sits there and eats hot dogs.
Like really rich people bring him to like their barbecues in the Hamptons to watch him eat 50 dogs.
Yes. And I guarantee you it happens.
What a claim to fame.
Pay him like $100,000 cash. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.